Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in North Africa and earned a BS in health science from Kalamazoo College. In 1992, he opened Eli Wine Company, which specializes in top-drawer wines from all over the world. He believes that the story of wine is written in 100 days, from flowering to harvesting, and also that every bottle of wine in the store reflects a point of view and deserves an audience. His name, Eli Bowd. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Eli Bowd, the proprietor for the last 26 years of Eli Wine Company. Eli, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. I'm delighted to be chatting with you today.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Oh, boy. Well, let me give you the Cliff's Notes version here, so I don't want to go on too long. We actually grew up in several places in North Africa. My family were in the... they were traders. They were in the fabric business and the spice business. And that's how I grew up, in the fabric, retail and wholesale and all of it. And the spice, which I, that's how I got to appreciate that, appreciating everything that has to do with taste. It's that heightened sense of the other things that they're nonverbal.
What's the biggest thing, Eli, Mom taught you, and what's the biggest thing Dad taught you?
Let me start with Dad. He had a favorite saying that has left an impression on me. He used to say to me, your goals should be your dreams with deadline. And that has been the defining principle in my life, is think of the goals that I want to achieve, and I dictate those goals. They're not imposed on me because they're self improvised, and I put deadlines to them, whether it's a day or a year or 3 years or 10 years. So I'm a believer in having a big plan rather than just living moment to moment.
And your mom?
It's the purity of purpose. It's her sense that surface matters. Of course, there are deeper issues in life, but you have to treat everything that you see at face value. You can judge or you can preordain judgments, but you cannot question motives. It's important that we stay with what we see and work with it.
Eli, how old were you when you got into the spice business?
Boy, I was very young, Jack. I was 6 or 7 years old. I mean, this is the way that I lived. I left school, I went to the shop, I went to another shop, I had to go between different shops, and I had my hands in fabrics, I had my nose in the spices, and that's the only way of life that I've known. Of course, you know, school was very important, education was very important, and that was really the education, and that was my window into the rest of the world, is the education. But reality was negotiated through fabrics and spices.
We're talking to Eli Bowd. Eli, when you're 18 years old, you leave North Africa and you go to Kalamazoo, Michigan.
I get asked that question all the time. What brought you to Kalamazoo, Michigan? When I started looking at the options of going to different schools, one school that came across, which was Kalamazoo College. Kalamazoo College, they have a beautiful program of sending their students overseas for 6 months and to have transcultural experiences. So that was known to me. Coming to the Midwest, Jack, that's what my family and I, we sat down and we talked about the area that I'm going to be at, which was Kalamazoo. And my family felt that the values of the Midwest, their ethics, their values. What animates the people is simpatico with our values. The hardworking, believing in others, believing in things beyond yourself. Those were very important to my family, and they felt comfortable sending me to Kalamazoo, Michigan. That's what brought me to the Midwest.
You earned a BS in health science from Kalamazoo College, and your dream back then...
to go on to medical school.
What happened?
Being obsessed with the daily issues, with the immediate goals rather than the larger goals, passing that exam to get into medical school, just reading that book for tomorrow that I need to take the exam, sort of blinded me to the larger picture. But when I got over all this, I sort of had to take another look at what I'm doing, and I decided maybe continuing with those studies is not the way to go for me. Now, by that time, I fell in love with wine, and I decided to just get off the track of the medical school track and go back to Kalamazoo and get into the wine business.
And the rest is history.
The rest is personal history.
When we come back, we're going to ask Eli how it was he actually got into the wine business. I'm Jack Grasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Grasula, and we're with Eli Bode, who's recognized as a world-class wine merchant. How did you ever actually get into the wine business, Eli?
Of course, you know, when I went back to Kalamazoo and I determined I want to be in the wine business, I had friends that they owned restaurants and retails, and they took me on as part of their team. And that's how I got into the actual wine business. But before I continue with this, let me tell you that being in wine altogether was premeditated on my part. Wine to me was the sum of its parts. And what interested me in wine is the parts, whether it's the vineyard, which is the farm, or the aesthetic of what wine is, and what wine means geographically, geography in the sense of the early 20th century geography being the sum of the parts in a place, the farm, the culture, the economic currents, the political currents. So all these different issues fascinated me about wine. When I decided to be in the wine retail, it was natural to me, coming from the retail background. So it was very easy to approach my friend that they had those establishments, and they hired me on, and that was from 87 to 91. And 91, I left and opened my own operation.
In 1992, you did open.
In 1992.
Eline Wine Company, first in Royal Oak, now in Birmingham. How does one go about opening a wine shop?
Jack, I don't advise it at this moment. I had the same conversation with a friend 2 weeks ago. It's a very capital-intense business, very inventory-intense business. That said, how do you get into it? Somebody has to have absolute conviction to get into that kind of commodity. Let me tell you, it's easiest to stock wine, but the idea of merchanting, that's an awesome responsibility. The merchant is an editor. The merchant brings to his people that will buy into what he or she is doing different points of view. But those are different points of view that they're worth listening to. Not every point of view out there in the wine world is worth listening to. And that's what I do when I put together my collection of wines. So to answer your question, how does somebody get into it? One of the books that I just read recently, Angela Duckworth, she talks about talent. And she says there is no such thing as talent. There is what's called grit and perseverance. Somebody has to have the determination, the belief in staying with what they do and believing that they can at the end of what they do, they can bring people along with them. And that's how, if somebody can ask themselves a question, if they can persevere, put in the time, the hard work, and having the open mind to look at different issues that put wine together, brings wine together, that person could start with a modest amount of money or a big amount of money, doesn't matter. As long as they do what they do based on those principles, that they can prevail.
Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration.
Correct, so, yes.
Eli, you specialize in wine from Burgundy, Bordeaux, and Spain. Right. Why?
So what I do is specializing in French wines. The two pillars of French wines are the Burgundy and the Bordeaux. And anything else is really aspires to be those two kind of wines. Why? As I said, because wine is the sum of its parts. Those places really are the benchmark for what wine is. And this is not a sort of a judgment statement about the quality. It's just saying that anybody, when they make wine, they emulate those areas. And so I set out to explore those benchmarks and share with my customers those benchmarks as well. I'll make the analogy here that if somebody wants to learn about literature, they have to read Joyce and Shakespeare to know what English literature is. Otherwise, there is no points of reference. Those wines are the points of reference. That said, what those wines bring to the table is many other issues, such as the place itself and the role of climate and the role of the human being in bringing the wine about. And those issues fascinated me, Jack. The story, the human story, the story of nature, the story of creating something that can articulate those issues.
Share with us, Eli, the anatomy of your business. How do you do business?
So the way that I conduct my business, let me tell you about the supply side of it, because that's really the most important part. I've been, as you pointed out earlier, in business for the last 30 years, on my own for 26 years. And all this period, I've developed contacts. I keep my ears to the ground in both France and Spain. I go there repeatedly. I go 4 or 5 times a year. I walk the farm with the makers. I talk to them about their wines. I talk about that the 100 days that you refer to every single day. And I develop a sense of what they do, and I stay with them. I become part of their team. And I'm with them through thick and thin. What I mean by that is some years they're triumphant, and some other years they don't have anything to sell, or they have maybe a meager amount to sell, but I stay with them. So I have hundreds and hundreds of people that I source from. Again, my role, I don't pretend to have the Paragon palette. My role is to listen to my makers and take their stories and bring it to my customer. At the end of the day, what makes my place, it's the conversation that I have with my customers. And to that point, Jack, I never estimate anybody. Everybody that I deal with is smart. I never hold back what wine means. I share with them all the story, whether it's complicated or not. And I always say, if you don't understand me, most likely I was not clear articulating what I need to articulate. Let me start all over again. So that's how I conduct my business, the sourcing part of it and sharing that story with my customers.
Anybody that's had the pleasure and the honor of walking into your store and asking you a question, walk away saying, this man's a professor, and I've just had a Harvard MBA class on a certain wine. Why do you do that?
Well, first of all, thank you for the compliments. That's not something that I aspire to live up to or be what it is. Let me tell you again, it's that sharing. It's that belief in this particular product, the wine. It's the belief in the people that make it. And that's what really makes me tick, and that's what allows for a conversation to be a deeper conversation. It's a loaded product, and I always tell people, Jack, that if you judge wine only in the merits of how it tastes or what it should be like, I think they're missing what wine is. In fact, the drinking that glass of wine, it's the end of that journey. Context matters. And to have that context and bring it to my customer, that's what really makes me stay with people and tell them what I do. That said, keep in mind also is, to me, a sale is not a sale. I look at my engagement with my customers as cultivation. I'm cultivating their approach to wine and their appreciation of wine, but in the meantime, they're giving me back. They're cultivating in me the curiosity. It's the sense I want to, after they leave, I'm very excited and I want to go back and talk to the people that supplied me with wine. I want to go and discover new wines. I want to go on that journey again. So it's really quite a high when I talk to the to my customers. It's a conversation that goes both ways.
It's obvious, just listening to you, Eli, you love people and your customers. They're family to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm so excited, Jack, to be talking to the people that I talk with. And I tell them what I have, and they tell me their reaction or their what they have. And I'm very excited because that's, Jack, that's me. That's my manifestation in another body, whether they're from a different point of view, different culture, different place, speak a different language. I am very excited to talk to them, because I have a sense that that is my possibilities.
When we come back, we'll ask them how it is you can have a successful business, loving your customers, and spending so much time with your customers. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula with Eli Baud, who believes that the story of wine is written in 100 days from flowering to harvesting. Eli, the last segment you talk about what customers mean to you and how much time you spend on them. You cannot run a business today in that manner and be successful.
Well, that's the conventional wisdom. Of course, the last chapter hasn't been written yet, so I'm still on my journey here. That said, I believe in the macro, not the micro, when it comes to those issues. When I'm talking with a customer, I've been known to tell people not to buy anything from me, just to listen to me, and I would like to listen to them as well. I've another nugget of wisdom from my father about salesmanship. He said, "When you, as a good salesperson, when somebody asks you a question, you should answer with a question, to understand what they want." So that said, I look at my relationship with my customers as something that's continuous. I want them back. Whatever they spend for the moment is not that important to me. So my level of engagement with them is to cultivate them as a customer, not cultivating a sale, but to hold their hand and go through the process. That said, as I said earlier, there are many points of view in wine, and hopefully the customer will give me time to explain to them those different point of views. And typically my customers will come back repeatedly to listen to the rest of the story, as it is.
Charles Kuralt. If you want to learn more, www.eliwine.com. Eli, tell us about people who deal with and are dependent on nature.
That's very interesting, because you asked me earlier about why French, why Spanish. The French wine have, or the French have built their idea of wine codified in laws to protect what's called typicity. Typicity means a wine that has a type reflective of where it comes from and the year that it's harvested or grown, the grape. they enshrine those laws for the makers to be the least interventionist. So the wines that we have that I bring about, they're typically or bring to the shop, they're wines that respect nature in that sense, and nature not only in being static but in motion, as in climate changes, the weather and all that. So that really taught me to respect nature altogether through those winemakers. In a sense, that's what I'm dealing with. The dealing with those winemakers as well, Jack, and maybe that's something that I did not mention. It's delightful, and it tends to be real, and I use the word real here, because those winemakers do not have any marketing plans. And I come to believe that any person that have their hands in soil, they don't have any made-up plans. It is what it is, and what nature and the heavenly powers throws in their direction, that's what they will have to deal with. And that also showed me the way to look at my own life. I take on whatever is thrown in my way, and I try to deal with it.
You're famous for saying the story of a wine is written in 100 days from flowering to harvesting. Please.
Going back to the issue of nature, here's a vine. Incidentally, the vine is typically grown in a soil or area where nothing else can grow. Vines back in the Middle Ages are thought of as heavenly intervention because it can survive anywhere. And it can provide us with nurturement, and we use for our own food, and also for symbolic issues. And whatever happens in those 100 days, it gets recorded in that grape. So, for example, if you have a lot of rain in the spring, of course, you know you're going to have a lighter wine. If you have a lot of heat in July, you're going to lose some of that hydration, and you end up with more concentrated wines. If you have too much heat, the skin responds to that. So all these issues, you can read them in a glass of wine. And again, the French approach and the Spanish approach is to be less interventionist, so you can read that story in the glass.
Back in 2014, Chris Castle wrote a terrific article about Eli, and he says, Eli approaches wine like a science fair Poindexter might a cool bug inside a jar, with none of the cruelty, of course, but with all of the unbridled, childlike, gut-level awe. Eli, you say wine is needed to be the protagonist.
What I mean by that is if somebody is interested in the wine and what it all means, they really have to have the proper audience for it, if you may. And therefore, they have to give it center stage to allow it to express itself. And maybe that's that statement, Jack, also goes back to how to use a wine. I get often asked, what shall I have with my food? And I say, just have a very simple wine that can go with food. The more ambitious wines, they really need center stage to roll out what they have. So that's what I mean by a protagonist, in a sense.
When most people think of fine wine, they think of the French. Eli, why?
To the last point that I just mentioned about wine being the protagonist, wine, there are two paradigms in wine, Jack. There is the everyday wine that we drink, and it's part of our meal, our gracious meal. And there are a level of wines that the French invented, if you may. The French did not invent wine, but they invented this concept that wine, if you isolate a particular area and you put the wine in the bottle and you let it age as it goes through the mill of time, it reveals at the end of that journey that the story of that place and time again, the year that it was grown in and the soil that it comes from. So that's the contribution of the French, that their wines express that sense. So that's why the French matter.
Speaking of the French, The French have a style, a joie about them. How they dress, how they present food on a plate, how they talk, their mannerisms. Why is that, Eli?
Because the French are God's chosen people, Jack. So they would like to make you think. No, on a serious note, let me just maybe not go as far as your statement would imply. But that said, and therein lies the subjectivity here, if you allow me. The French aesthetic, if you may, whether it's in clothing or behavior, and in wine, it has a certain aesthetic that has to do with balance. And I happen to believe in that. I happen to believe that balance is everything. And that's one mantra when it comes to making wine, the French. They aspire to create that balance in the wine. And that appeals to me greatly. The idea that all the different mechanical parts in a wine and the different issues could add up to something that if you're paying attention, you can take it apart. And it could be the grist for intellectual talk. But if you decide to ignore it, we'll be sitting back there and you enjoy it. So that's what I call the French aesthetic in winemaking, incidentally.
Speaking of aesthetics, there are certain matches made in heaven. Rodgers and Hammerstein, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Chet Huntley, David Brinkley, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and bread, cheese, and wine. Why?
Wines typically come from areas where breads are made in different ways and cheeses are made in different ways. And frankly, here we are, we're talking about wines that have their wines to contemplate. They need a blank canvas, if you may, to be thrown against. And bread, as you know, can take on anything else and make it play its role. And the same with cheese. It's not about necessarily synergy, but it's about allowing the wine to behave the way it wants to behave. You cannot do that, for example, with a dish of Thai food. It's hard to do because the wine competes with the wine and the wine competes with it. But a bread and cheese are the absolute perfect backdrop to allow everything that's meant to be in wine to shine.
We're talking to Eli Bowden. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Eli Bowden, who believes that every bottle of wine in his store reflects a point of view and deserves an audience. Speaking of an audience, bread, cheese, and wine are perfect. What should the person bring to the table with wine?
That's a great question, Jack. It's in the eyes of the beholder, but the beholder has to develop that context. And that's what I do at the shop, in a sense, that I try to provide larger context, and it happens over more than one time. It's essential in the beginning that somebody would approach wine in a way that's appreciative of what it does. I growing up, one of the authors that I read for early 20th century, a French author by the name of Marcel Rouff, he said that art is the understanding of beauty through the senses. And in order to understand the dream of a Vinci or the inner life of a Bach, one must be capable of adoring the scented and fugitive soul of a passionate wine. So to take your time and think about that wine that you have in your glass, take your time as you drink it. And here I'm saying to people that if you appreciate wine, you will drink less, actually, because every sip matters. Every whiff tells a story, and you want to hear it. And That's what the drinker should bring to the table. It's that higher appreciation. I know this sounds philosophical, Jack, but it's really the essence of living. It's life examined. Isn't that what it is? Why not in a glass of wine? The little things, the little gestures that we do in life, if they're worth examining, it adds up to something that's, or a life that's worth living.
Eli, your Eli Wine Company is on the northeast corner of 14 Mile and Woodward in Birmingham. You walk into the store, you have old wooden crates in the aisles, stacked 10 feet high, a few tasting tables, and you only display one bottle of each wine. Why?
The wines have to be kept in the right environment. We pay it, and this is more of a technical issue. Wines are very susceptible to heat, to humidity, to light. So I try to keep the wines, and we do keep them in the perfect circumstance and the perfect conditions. I keep them in boxes to keep them away from light, and we keep the right temperature, and we keep the right humidity. That's the only way that we can protect that precious, I like to think it's precious wine, and it's also respect for the people that have toiled to make the wine, to bring it to us. When I bring it, I have the utmost respect for them to make sure, and that's my promise to them, to keep it in the right conditions.
Once again, if you want to learn more, www.eliewine.com. Eli, and I quote you now, we are not human beings. We are human becomings.
And incidentally, that goes for our palates. We're our palates becoming. I'm always flabbergasted when people talk to me and they tell me they know what they like. And I always say, well, that's fine. But you remember those pictures from 20 years ago? And you look back and you say, did I dress up that way? So in a sense, it's always in the making. It's that old adage of it's the journey that matters. And it goes back to the wine. You could never find a perfect wine because there is no such thing. It's the journey that matters.
Your enthusiasm is contagious, and you have childlike awe. How do you keep that as years go by?
Jack, it's easy. It's truly easy with the kind of people that I deal with, the kind of commodity that I share with them, the kind of experiences that I relate to them. And I'm very lucky to have people that would indulge me to express all those disparate parts that maybe they don't make a perfect narrative, but maybe Eli is the narrative. Who knows?
You say the wines showed very well.
Right. Going back to the issue of balance and the French aesthetic, and of course the more ambitious wines, they tend to, when we drink them, it tends to be a snapshot of the life of the wine. So sometimes when we have a glass of wine, maybe it's not perfect because it doesn't have the balance for the moment. And so if you leave it for a day or two or months or years, it could achieve certain balance with time. So when I say a wine showed very well, that means we happen to catch the wine at a moment where all the elements in it are aligned in a way that makes it harmonious.
Bordeaux's 82, 86, and 2000 were fabulous years. Why?
Well, first of all, between 82 and 2000, that's 18-year spread. And, Jack, we've learned a lot in 18 years. And now forward to 2014 and 15 that we have, we've learned even much more. When we say that it's a perfect year, it goes back to the issue that those wines, nature was the weather for the year, and nature provided us with the engineering parts to make our wines last. 2000 was a year that you can keep longer. 82, a year that you can keep longer. And that's what allows me and you to open those bottles in time and be exposed to that mother lode that I called time and space. That's what makes those years perfect years, because it did provide us with the right elements to preserve the wine and the fruit to be preserved in the first place.
I quote you again, talking about balance. You say balance and harmony.
Balance and harmony. Balance is the innate. Harmony is our perception. And that's the two roles that we have as somebody sits at a table. The wine provides the balance, and our perception of it as harmonious is our perception of it as harmonious. And those are the two parts that fit together.
Once in a while, you have classes at the wine shop, and recently you had your second annual Bordeaux Master Class.
Right. This is an event that we had. We had different venues to explore wine, specifically the Bordeaux wines. And we brought in different chateau owners. You know, typically the Bordeaux wines are housed in chateaus. And the proprietors and the general directors came to talk about their wines. And that's one of the things that I do. I try, you know, you have a producer, you have a drinker. I try to eliminate the many toll booths in between to bring to the drinker the horse, if you may.
As our time winds down this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners, Eli?
Life examined, wine examined. Life has many parts that could be enjoyed. One of them is one of them. And as you approach wine, be thoughtful. Be considerate of the people that make the wine, what they're trying to achieve. And also, the best conversation that you have is the conversation that you would have with the people that sell you the wine. That's your point of contact. Go to where you feel comfortable and ask questions. There's no mystery about wine. It's a farm product. And wherever you go, make sure that you talk to the people that sell you the wine.
Eli, what a shining example of a person who loves people and, two, has found and is living his life's passion. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack, and thank you for having me. I enjoyed it, and I look forward to sharing a glass of wine with you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Grisula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spot.
Believe in yourself.